I think about last year or last 2 years, I can't remember, but COVID is making everyone lose track of time. There's a TV presenter in America called Nick Cannon. I'm not sure if you've heard of him. Okay,
No,
so
I don't. I would like to know who he is.
he used to present America Got Talent, like a TV show, but he also hosts a podcast where he talked about Semitism, and he said that he said something that got him in trouble. Can still hear me okay? Okay, he said something that got him into trouble, that he lost a lot of jobs, and he said that the original Semitic people are Africans, are black people, and that was considered anti-Semitic, and then he lost his job and things like that. But so I'm thinking logically, if 600 to 700 years ago, if the human race as we know it existed only in Africa about 700,000 years ago, or 700 years ago, several thousand. So if we existed only in Africa, so it makes sense to say that the origin of everything comes from there.
Yeah, it's a camp. You know what I mean by a camp? It's a camp. It's a
No,
position.
okay.
A camp. I mean, it's there are in the Afrocentric soup. There is the claim that the Jews, the white Jews, are imposters. That the real Jews are the blacks. And there are some trends who follow this idea.
Okay. No, I wouldn't personally, I wouldn't say that the Jewish people in Israel are imposters. That wouldn't be a right thing to say. But if logically humans as we know it originates from Africa,
Yeah. Biologically,
logic.
it's absolutely it's proved
Yes.
now.
Yes.
It has been proved.
So the Jewish people in Israel will be referred to as the descendants of the Jewish people in Africa, and not vice, or not the other way around.
Not on the other way. Difficult to make it admitted by them.
This podcast came to be because I want to reignite discussions about Pan-Africanism, and the purpose is to plant seeds of unity and inspiration among Africans, both at home and in the diaspora. I believe we have come to the stage where our continent is more vulnerable than ever, and it's up to us to decide our fate moving forward. What we will come to realize, I hope, is that we're so much more alike than we're different. And this show is just a small contribution to the public discourse that is going on in Africa right now. My name is Soshima Iroh, and this is the Pan-African Experience. On today's episode, I'm going to be having a conversation with Dr. Edith Bruder. Edith Bruder is a French anthropologist who has an academic multidisciplinary background. The focus of her research is on the documentation and the analysis of the history and phenomena of Jewish practices across sub-Saharan Africa, new religious movements, forgotten diasporas, contemporary diasporas, and particular Jewish identities. She is the founder and president of the International Society for the Study of African Jewry. She is a research associate at the French National Center for Scientific Research and a research fellow at University of South Africa. She is the author of Black Jews of Africa: History, Religion, Identity. She is the editor of Jews from Elsewhere: Forgotten Diasporas, Contemporary Diasporas, and Particular Jewish Identities. She is the co-editor of African Zion: Studies in Black Judaism, African Journeys to Judaism, as well as numerous scientific articles and contributions to works published in this field. I'm very honored and grateful to have Dr. Bruder on the podcast. Dr. Dick Bruder, welcome to the Pan-African Experience.
I thank you for your invitation. And I am delighted with your interest in this topic, in the topic of African Judaism.
Yes, I mean, you have traveled across Africa, in the course of your study, in studying Black Jews of Africa. I mean, this requires a great deal of dedication. I was wondering what motivated you to embark on this quest in the first place.
It's a very fascinating story. In my home in Paris in 21, I switched on French TV, and then I saw on the screen Professor Matjiva, who was the leader of the South Africa Lamba tribe, with a Jewish skull cap on his head and a Jewish cloak covering his shoulders. And he was explaining that his people were one of the lost tribes of Israel. I'm going to quote him because it's very interesting. He said, "The Lamba are Jews. We are the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the rest of them all. Those are our blood relatives. We came from the Israelites. We came from Sena. We crossed the sea, and we made iron and gold and pottery as we came down through Africa." End of the quotation. It must be said that the Lamba's distinctive cultural elements, their traditions, their saga of origins, their food taboos, their ritual slaughter of animals, their circumcision rites, and their endogamy clearly suggested that they could be of Hebrew descent. It seems that ethnographers and missionaries from the early 20th century propagated the idea of an Hebrew descent of the Lamba. And they did so in placing emphasis on their differences from groups among whom they lived. Of course, as you can imagine, I was deeply intrigued by the issue. Who could think of lost Jewish tribes in Africa? Would there be other unsuspected Jewish claimants in the continent? Had the mythic image of the Beta Israel, the so-called Falasha, as the lost tribe of Dan in Ethiopia, had this mythic image produced echoes throughout Africa? If such people existed, their stories deserve to be told, not only to satisfy my curiosity, but also to fill in some of the gaps of our understanding of the penetration of Jewish ideas in Africa. The paucity of academic studies on Judaism in Africa, and the paradoxical dimension of an African Jewish religious identity stimulated me a lot to undertake the research on which my first book, The Black Jews of Africa, is based. Then I decided to follow the footsteps of the lost tribes of Africa and to tell their story. That's all.
I mean, you refer to the lost tribe. And, as someone from Igbo tribe in Nigeria, I always hear about we being of Jewish descendant and the lost tribe, yeah. But I never really take it seriously, because there's a lot of people that talk about being of Jewish descendant. So until you mentioned my tribe in your book as well. So I was wondering if you can give a background on the lost tribe, how did that come to be?
Okay, as you are of Igbo region, you may have heard of Olauda Equiano. I don't know if you heard of him. He was also known as Gustavus Vassa. In fact, he was a slave, but not only a slave. According to Equiano himself, he was born in 1745 in an Igbo village in the southwest of Nigeria, his father being an hereditary tribal chief. When he was 11 years old, he was kidnapped and sold to British slave traders who sent it everywhere, to the West Indies, etc. Over the next 30 years, while passing from master to master, he acquired many skills and traveled widely to various varied places. Equiano was an educated man, and he published a book that I recommend, The Interesting Narrative of the Life of Olauda Equiano, or Gustavus Vassa, the African. He published this book in London in 1789. This book had an immediate success and ran into several re-editions. It is both a spiritual autobiography, a slave narrative, and a travel book. Equiano, who was Baptist, a Christian, was a pious man imbued with the text of the Old Testament. His autobiography includes a striking description of religion and culture among the Igbo. He draws parallels between the fate of the slaves and the Hebrews. He mined a trove of biblical commentary to claim that the Igbo were descended from ancient Jews and that their religion was a modern survival of ancient biblical religion. Equiano's book spread in Nigeria and elsewhere. The idea that the Igbo, and why not other Africans, people, could descend from the lost time. It must be said that the Exodus and the recognition of the Ethiopian Jews, identified as the lost tribe of Dan in the 1980s and the 1990s, have led to an interest in such development and in the development of similar lost tribes' identity in other parts of Africa.
Has there been established how the tribe got lost, in the lineage, where there was a breakaway, trying to trace back? In the current state of research,
it's not possible to. We don't have reliable sources.
Okay.
We can mix secondary sources to have an idea, but always hypothesis.
Okay, in one of your interviews that I saw, you said that the correlation between African Judaism and Old Testament is at the core of the issue of the biblical children. You know, can you expand on this, please?
Yes. In fact, this question completes the previous one.
Okay.
The process that led from metaphorical kinship to total identification with the Jew was strongly supported by the correspondences discovered by Christianized Africans between the Old Testament and their own traditions. Rituals and rules found scattered throughout much of the Old Testament are connected with the nearly universal taboos on food, birth, blood, and death. And they have counterparts in African usages. They were rediscovered, sometimes modified, in multivalent forms by African peoples. African authors from various African countries, such as Kwesi Dixon in Ghana, or John Beattie in Kenya, or Emmanuel Idowu in Nigeria, or Samuel Kibicho in Kenya, demonstrated the monotheistic nature of African religions. This is very important. And the same concept of creation, ex nihilo, reported all over Africa. Africans recognized their cultural rights in the Old Testament through beliefs, symbols, and practices. And they have used them through their oral traditions as an affirmation of their cultural and religious heritage. Upon their arrival in Africa, missionaries generally required converts to abstain from observing traditional African practices. They considered that they were incompatible with being a Christian. The African entered in conflict with missions teaching by studying the Old Testament and used it to defend their custom. The early founders of the Judaizing movements spent long periods studying the Bible, and they discovered a biblical basis for the defense of their customs. They did not want to imitate the practices of the mission churches. They turned to the Bible, from where they identified the teaching and practices and which are observed to the present. This was their spiritual and political position.
Okay. Well, okay, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. I mean, there's always an interaction between blackness and Judaism with regards to the Western portrayal of racial promiscuity between Jews and blacks. And I was wondering if this is a byproduct of colonialism. You know, is this something that you can elaborate on?
Yes, it's an important topic. Blackness as a common denominator of the inferiority of Africans as well as Jews has a long history in Western culture, long before colonialism. The Roman historian Tacitus in the first century, in his criticism of the Jews and their customs, presents them as wallowing in superstition, sexually promiscuous and indolent. That is exactly the same characteristics that were assigned to the Africans. What was seen as the physical ugliness of the Jews, long nose, flat feet, and hairy body, were merely considered as a component of their blackness. As early as the 13th century, an expression of religious and ethnical hostilities toward Africans and Jews is represented in the overlap of Jew and black in the representation of Judas' treason, where Judah is black in this representation. Jewish ancient writings already mention the Jewish appropriation of this self-image. The Jews incorporated this image of themselves as blacks. 17th century English travelers renewed the accepted stereotypes of Jewish racial otherness, including the belief that Jews were black-skinned. In the 17th century, a certain William Brereton noted his impression of the Jews in the synagogue of Amsterdam. I'm going to quote him. He observed that the Jewish men are most black and insatiably given unto women. For the 18th and 19th century scientists, the blackness of the Jews was not only a mark of racial inferiority, but also the external manifestation of a disease. A Bavarian writer, Johann Pörsl, who visited Vienna in the 18th century, described the Viennese Jew as suffering from Jewishness, which means blackness. Thus, the racial promiscuity of Jews and Africans became commonplace in the 19th century and came to be adopted as such by some 20th century anthropologists, which declared on occasion that Jews were black. One can say that racialism could represent a more or less secularized version of the religious views and stereotypes of Jews and Africans. Hope that I have answered your question.
Yes, yes. This is a very, I have to say, talking about Jewishness or Judaism with regards to black people, you know, can also be controversial sometimes, you know, and then I have a question on that at a later stage in this interview. But I was wondering if the early, you know, ethnographers or, you know, or the current ones like you, or the researchers working in this field have been able to find out if all the Jews of Africa are of common ancestry. Because I recently sent out my DNA to 23andMe. I'm not quite sure how accurate that would be, just to find out what I can see, you know, as part of an episode for this podcast. So I was wondering if, you know, Jews of Africa are of common ancestry.
Up to now, no research allows to establish a single origin for the various African people claiming a Jewish ancestry. However, some researchers are looking into the question. It's not possible to go into details, but I can tell you that there are some recent Western hypotheses supported by a professor of African history at the University of Beirut in Germany. His name is Dirk Lange. Lange suggests that in earliest times, the Canaanite society was most likely established in West Africa through the agency of Phoenician officials and traders from North Africa. Lange tries to explain that the historical tradition of the Central Sudan contained clear evidence of Canaanite Israelite influences. He suggests that the existence of early trans-Saharan contacts reach back to the pre-Roman period, and he supports his suggestion by written records, oral tradition, and cult dramatic performances. But it's difficult to say more in the current state of research. In another question, I will tell you about more about DNA.
Okay. So, you know, with regards to theories of Afrocentricism, and you know, with regards to the possibility, the possible appropriation of Jewish history by Africans, you know, because like I told you, you know, I always hear, you know, this group will say, "Oh, we are Jewish ancestry." You know, Igbo people will say we are Jewish ancestry. We have a prominent Igbo activist, Mazi Nnamdi Kanu. I'm not sure if you're aware of him. He often goes to Israel and wears the cap and
wears the skull cap.
Yeah, wears the skull cap. So yeah, he's claiming the Jewish ancestry. So just, it would be great if you could, if you would talk about the notion that Africans are the true Jewish race.
Hebrew people.
Yes.
Let's say some words about Afrocentrism firstly.
Okay.
Afrocentrism is an intellectual movement, and this movement contests the dominance of European interpretation of Africa, and they want to write Africa's history from an African point of view. The first African-American authors decided to write the historiography of a glorious African past at the end of the 18th century. Afrocentric thoughts asserts that humankind developed first in Africa, not only biologically, biologically.
Okay, biologically,
biologiquement,
yes.
Biologiquement.
Yes.
As it's now accepted, but also in terms of civilization. This movement serves both the political and psychological needs of Africans and their diaspora. Above all, it expresses a rupture with Western ideological and cultural tutelage. Drawing mainly on the Bible, these works of the African-American authors, which were of impressive autodidact scholarship, argued that ancient Africa was the birthplace of civilization. They point to Egypt, Ethiopia, and Carthage as great ancient African civilization. And they claim that the Egyptians, who were a Negro population, had talked to Greek, and that African-derived knowledge had passed on to Europeans via Greece and Rome. The identification with the great Egyptian or Ethiopian civilization provided the paradigm and the impetus for the strategies that were utilized by African Americans in their search for their own history. The assertion of a great cultural heritage, this is what they claimed. Claiming ties to an exclusive lineage led to the assimilation of Judaism as a source of Black identity. This is the core of this topic. The claim that people of African descent should rediscover common sociocultural tradition derived from their shared origins, interacted with the religious encounter of symbols and images of Judaism in myriad of forms. Traditions of Afrocentrist misography nurtured a great number of African-American religious movements, such as Ethiopianist movements, Black Jews, Rastafarianism, which brings us to the next topic.
Yes, before we go to the next topic, I was wondering, because I think about last year or last 2 years, I can't remember, but COVID is making everyone lose track of time. There's a TV presenter in America called Nick Cannon. I'm not sure if you've heard of him.
No.
Okay,
no.
So he...
I would like to know who he is.
Okay, he used to present America Got Talent, like a TV show, but he also hosts a podcast where he talked about Semitism, and he said that he said something that got him in trouble, you know. Can you still hear me okay?
Mm.
Okay, he said something that got him into trouble, that, you know, he lost a lot of jobs, and he said that the original Semitic people are Africans, are Black people, and that was considered anti-Semitic. And then he lost his job and things like that. But so I'm thinking, logically, if 600 to 700 years ago, if the human race as we know it existed only in Africa, about 700,000 years ago, 700 years ago, you know, 700,000. So if we existed only in Africa, so it makes sense to say that the origin of everything comes from there.
Yeah, it's a camp. You know what I mean by a camp? It's a camp.
No,
a position.
Okay.
A camp. I mean, it's there are in the Afrocentric soup. There is the claim that the Jews, the white Jews, are imposters. That the real Jews are the blacks. And there are some trends who follow this idea.
Okay. No, I wouldn't personally say that the Jewish people in Israel are imposters. That wouldn't be a right thing to say. But if logically humans as we know it originates from Africa.
Biologically, it's absolutely it's proved.
Yes.
Now.
Yes. So
it's been proved.
So the Jewish people in Israel will be referred to as the descendants of the Jewish people in Africa, and not vice, or not the other way around.
Not on the other way. Difficult to make it admitted by them.
I was wondering if there's a connection between the Hebrew Israelites in Israel and the Rastafarian movement in Jamaica. You know, I always hear this connection, but is this something you can talk about a little bit?
Yeah. Of course there are a lot. From the 1960, I'm going to talk about Chicago, that became the home of emerging Black Jewish communities with many large congregations and some small ones. At the beginning of 1967, one congregation was formed with the help of some white rabbis. Among these diverse groups was a group formerly called the Abeta, Hebrew Israel Cultural Center, whose central ideology was a belief in African Americans' repatriation to the land of their ancestors. The leader of this group, Carter Ben-Ami, called themselves Hebrew Israelites. And Ben-Ami had a divine revelation according to which Africans were descendants of the Judah tribe exiled in Africa during the dispersal period, that they were the true Hebrews, and that the time had come for them to return to their homeland. The Rastafarian movement is born in Jamaica, and he has many deep connections with the Hebrew Israelites. From the 1930s on, the Rastafarian movement acquired great moral authority in Jamaica due to the question, he had a pioneering approach to the question of racial identity and skin color. And an important role is in Jamaican culture, as you know. As in the United States, resistance in Jamaica was characterized by religion and by proposals modeled on those of Zionism. The need for physical identification led Rastafarians to a personal rewriting of biblical history, in which they spread the subversive image of a black God, This is what we were telling just before. And to declaring the Jewish ancestors of the such as Solomon, Moses, or Jesus, were also black, that they were also black. These two movements and many others partly rely on the central narrative of the scriptures as a form of resistance to a feeling of oppression, and also on the common need to recover identity and history. By claiming that all Africans were Hebrews, Marcus Garvey put in place a modern theology which operated effectively and enabled African Americans to establish a link via the Cushite. So this is the name of the inhabitants of Africa in the Bible, via the Cushites or the sons of Ham, with the most remote ancestors of the Old Testament.
Obviously, you don't have to talk about this. In the course of your studies, did you encounter any, because when you were explaining something for me previously, say in the 17th century, you know, some of the people that depicted Judah or the Jews depicted them as black people, you know, they were described as black people. So in the course of your study, have you encountered any concerted effort to hide some of this historical information, or maybe not to make it as obvious as possible?
No, nobody tries to hide, but we can prove it, that's all.
Okay.
Nobody tries to hide something. There is no complotism to hide that Jewish ancestors could have been black or of African origin, but we have no sources. And as you know, ethnographers, anthropologists, we need sources to claim something.
Yes, yes. It's quite difficult to get sources from 17th century, correct, if it's not documented.
Yes, but I think that the research in this field is just started.
Wow.
It's just starting. So there is a future for this.
Okay. So can you elaborate on those African groups that have declared themselves Jewish, of Jewish ancestry? Like I mentioned, the Igbos, you know, us in Nigeria, the Igbos, you have the House of Israel in Ghana, you have the Lemba of South Africa and Zimbabwe, the Baluba in Congo, and so on and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about these groups, please?
Yes. The case of the Lemba, will I like your question on genealogy? From the 1990s, I told you that the Lemba oral tradition recounts that the first Lemba was coming from Sena in the north, and that men who went to Africa married African women. So the Lemba had a white genealogy on the paternal line and an African genealogy. This is what on the maternal descent. Two genealogists in the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg in South Africa. They are Professor Spurdle and Jenkins. They had the idea of trying to solve the mystery of the Lemba's origin by collecting and analyzing their genetic material. They carried out a first analysis in which they established that 50% of the Lemba's Y chromosomes the man, were of Semitic origin, and 40% were Negroid, with the remaining 10% unidentified. The conclusion of this first analysis clearly suggested a genetic history quite consistent with the Lamba oral tradition. And the I can tell you, maybe you already know this, that the results of that study found a wide audience in the 1990s. Spurdle and Jenkins, the two genealogists, also envisaged that the Jewish origins of the Lamba could be corroborated by a similarity between the Lamba's Y chromosomes and those of Jewish men living in other parts of the world. And this was confirmed by subsequent analysis. The way in which these results have been presented by the media and the way in which this presentation have been transformed into group narratives have played a major role in the impact of genetics on group identity in communities from Africa to Asia. Given the increased technological access to information throughout the world, it is certain that DNA research on groups' origin is one of the contemporary elements likely to modify the consciousness of such groups. But the use of genetics only makes sense when it is associated with oral tradition and myths about the origins of the group. Not only genetics. One part of the understanding of this issue, but not, and it is not impossible to summarize an individual to his genetic.
Okay. And I often wonder, I know genealogy is not your field, but I often wonder how accurate genealogy study will be if I have to do a genealogical assessment of my ancestry. There has to be a database of my ancestry to match my genetic code or material. So if that is not in place, that's why I was a little bit skeptical about 23andMe trying to do the analysis, but I sent my analysis just for the purpose of this podcast, just to do an episode on that to find out what their studies will say about my ancestry. But if, for there to be a conclusive result, there has to be a genetic material from my ancestors to be able to match my genetics with. So if that does not exist, it's very unlikely that someone can tell me conclusively that this is my ancestry, if that makes sense.
I'm much pleased to see that you are able to discriminate on this. Much pleased, because most of people, when genetics has talked, genetics is right. Genetics decides from where you are coming. It is the proof of your identity, of your heritage, of your history. But it's not.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. So I was wondering if there's a political motivation in the appropriation of Jewish identity, Jewish history, Jewish heritage, you know, and if that's the case, you know, what are they and what are the possible impacts, you know, both on Africans and the Jewish people of Israel? Because there's so many people that claim this heritage.
The political motivation is an essential dimension of the appropriation of Jewish heritage by Africans. As I told several times, Africans found in the scriptures meaning and revelation in their contemporary struggle for physical and spiritual liberation from colonial rule. The story of God's liberation of the Hebrews resonated with Africans who suffered colonial oppression and the terrible experience of slavery. Along with the deprivation of their traditional religions. Analogies in experiences between Africans and Jews produced important models, assuming what Yvonne Chiro names allegorical and metaphorical significance. Many African theologians and writers, Dixon, Upcong, for example, outline that the political appeal of the Old Testament can be considered as one of the main factors that explains the inclination of Africans towards the appropriation of Jewish history. They are African theologians and writers. The case of the Igbo is a good example. The 30-month Biafran War was a traumatic experience for the Igbo. And the climax, in fact, of the history of Igbo Jewish identity at the same time. From the beginning of the crisis in Nigeria, it was in 1966, local authorities did not make a serious attempt to protect Igbo against violence. We are all aware of the mass massacres committed by the soldiers, by the refusal of the government to stop the raids on Igbo civilian targets. We are aware of the stories of the atrocities witnessed by the survivors and the strategy of starving Biafrans to submissions. During and after the war, African and Western journalists throughout the United States, Europe, and Africa largely sensitized by the propaganda efforts of the Biafran leaders, used reference to genocide and holy war to arouse international consciousness. This awareness helped emphasize the widespread sentiment among the Igbo that they were part of the Jewish people. They had found in Lost Tribes identity an important source for sustaining spiritual power. They have found in the Biafra war complete identification with genocide and the Jews.
Yes, that's what I wanted to, say, because once I started to realize or learn about the Jewish ancestry of the Igbo people, so all the persecution and the things we're experiencing makes sense now, because Jewish people are always being persecuted and, people are always trying to wipe them, out, which is pretty much what the Igbo people are experiencing in Nigeria up till today, for some reason. Go ahead.
The Biafran War was the climax of the Jewish identity. Since then, they can claim that they are Jews because they suffered as Jews during the war.
So I think we've come to the end of our interview, but I was wondering if do you have anything else to add with regards to, black Jews of Africa and their relationship with the Jewish people of Israel. Is there something else you would like to add there? I would like to see more interactions with between Black Jews of Africa and the Jewish people of Israel. I would like to see more interaction, more collaboration, more brotherhood or sisterhood.
Yes, I can perfectly understand what you mean. You know that in Israel, people, as in every country, they don't talk with one voice. There are so many voices. There are a lot of people who support African Judaism, and there are other people who don't support African Judaism and African Jews.
Well, we'll end it there, Dr. Edith Bruder. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.